Sometimes you need to turn the power off, let your system rest, and reset yourself. This reset allows you to access clear direction, deep wisdom, greater freedom, and unlimited creativity. No matter your concerns, money, health, relationships, career, or any other life challenge, you have the ability to reset yourself. I'm Franklin Taggart. Welcome to the Reset Podcast. My guest for this episode is hobby farmer Melissa Davis. 8 years ago, Melissa Davis left a management career to begin growing food for her family. After several years of preparing the soil on her family's micro farm, Melissa now grows about half of the food her family consumes in a year. She calls it hobby farming, but it sounds like a lot more work than most hobbies. This is her story about her transition from corporate work to working in the soil and her new interest in acquiring a small manufacturing business. This interview was recorded on Zoom. Zoom video conferencing is available for Windows, Mac, iOS, and Android. There's a link in the description to try Zoom today. Welcome, everybody. I'm Franklin Taggart with the Reset Podcast, and my guest today is a woman named Melissa Davis. And Melissa has a very, very interesting story coming from a background of a career in manufacturing and management, and she's left that behind. We're going to hear all about that. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you, Franklin. It's good to be here.
I'm excited to have you on the show, and I'm really excited to hear more of your story. We talked a little bit preliminarily, and sounds like that there's some fascinating facts to tell. First of all, tell us a little bit about the background that you come from in terms of your career.
So my career, I have a degree in English, at the time when I graduated, there wasn't any kind of a technical communication degree. So my business, the focus was in business and technical writing, as the school I was at was kind of creating that as a curriculum. I started doing technical writing and went into manufacturing. My husband and I moved to Colorado in 95. Mm-hmm. It's part of one of our lives' big transitions. He'd gotten out of the Navy, and I was finished with school. So we were bringing our son out here to Colorado, and I went to work for Hewlett-Packard. Mm-hmm. And I've done writing for technical writing for everything from online help systems to how to build widgets to user manuals and those types of things. Mm-hmm. So I worked in for Hewlett-Packard, and then it transitioned to Agilent, as so many people here in Northern Colorado kind of went through that roller coaster. I've managed machine shops, manufacturing environment there, and contract manufacturing, which was a lot of fun. I managed the customer relationship side of that piece, and I would volunteer on the weekends when the crew would need to do overtime to meet a customer deadline. I'd come in and I'd help with the manufacturing and assembly of the products, which gave me unique insight into the challenges that can be made for folks doing assembly work if things aren't all together the way they need to be. About 8 years ago, I left that. Another big life transition. Yeah. Hard reset button on this one, where my husband and I, we had moved out of town to 6 acres in a rural area here in Colorado, and we started working on growing our own food in probably one of the least likely of places on a foothill that's limestone silt. So anybody who knows about soil knows you're not growing very much in that. So
no. A little bit of prairie grass, maybe.
A little bit of prairie grass, some great goat heads.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet. Those are tasty in soup. Well, it's so that was just a few years ago. You said about 8 years ago?
Yeah, about 8 years ago we made that transition. And I've been focused pretty much entirely on growing our food, and have some hobbies and things that blend into that. But I do some gig work on the side. I take care of people's gardens and those types of things. I grow herbs and sell things that I make with the herbs to people.
You still do any Still do any technical writing or any other writing?
I don't do any of that. It's an interesting thing that as I've transitioned over time, that how less and less of that has been present with me. If I write now, it's short stories and essays and those types of things, mm-hmm. purely for my personal pleasure.
Well, that's kind of cool. It's like you're saving your writing for yourself.
Yeah, I save it for myself. There are a few people I get I share it with, but not out into the broad audience anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting back to growing your own food, you mentioned in the preliminary talking that the biggest challenge was that you had to build up the soil first before you could grow anything. You tell us a little bit about what that entailed.
Yeah. Well, my husband and I both grew up loving growing food. He was in upstate New York where things grow really, really well, really, really easily. And I grew up in central Illinois. And again, another place where things grow really easily. Mm-hmm. The joke is that you can, on your way to the garden, if you drop the seed box, you'll have a garden right where you drop the seed box. We didn't grow up with kind of any need to water or anything like that. Here, it's really different. We're a semi-arid climate in northern Colorado along the Front Range. And the soil on our hill is limestone silt with probably about 12 inches underneath that is shale. Mm. And some of it is petroleum impregnated shale. So even as you break the surface, you can smell the kind of oil coming out of it. But our work in building the soil has involved a lot of manure. Oh, my joke with people is it's just poop, people, that a lot of manure from our animals. We've added animals over time. Our norm is to research for about a year or so and then add that animal to the farm operation here and growing for ourselves. So a lot of manure, a lot of organic material going into the soil over and over and over again. And we're at the point now where probably about 80% of the garden is very friable, loamy, beautiful soil that grows whatever we want. But mm-hmm. a lot of bags of leaves have gone into that. And a lot of pine mulch, mm-hmm. on chip mulch on the paths and such in between to introduce kind of a great fungal bacterial relationship, because that was also lacking in the soil out here. It was very sterile. So now the soil has a lot of life. You can go stick your hand down in it and come up with a bunch of worms pretty easily. So a lot easier to work on now than it was 8 years ago.
I'll bet. So how much of the 6 acres have you converted to your garden?
Oh, most of the 6 acres we just leave fallow. It's so about 4 acres of our property is fallow prairie grass that we not fenced or anything, so the wildlife can wander their way through. The wildflowers grow. We probably have about 3,000 square feet in garden space.
Wow.
It's still a good sized plot for growing things. And it's a combination now of what would be considered permaculture, mm-hmm. Plants that, and shrubs, trees, perennial plants that return year to year and give us a nice border and kind of the bones of the garden. And then the rest of it is beds where I plant my herbs. I have a lot of herbs that I grow, mm-hmm. and our food.
And so are you able to grow all of the food that you consume, or do you need to still supplement?
No, we have to supplement. I came up with a number talking to somebody the other day. I think the percentage of what we grow for ourselves is about 50%. Mm-hmm. So I'm still buying, oil, like our olive oil.
Yeah.
Grains, those types of things from, we belong to a food buying club, mm-hmm. Where we buy organic or sustainably grown foods as local as possible and support other people's farming operations that way too. But we're probably at about 50%. I can't grow all the fruit that we want, mm-hmm. those types of things, but I do grow a lot of the vegetables I grow, I then preserve for us to eat over the winter, dehydrate, can, those types of things, freezing as a last option.
So this, the gardening is your full-time job pretty much. It's like, that's what you really do all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty much the day. My day hinges on what I'm going to do out there. I start out every day. I call it picking rabbit salad. So we have rabbits, some of the best fertilizer developers ever.
Isn't that right?
Weeds or overgrown plants one day, and the next day I have fertilizer I can spread on the garden. So I go out and pick. I spend about a half an hour out there every morning doing kind of a weeding chore. The first hour of the day is all about the animals.
Yeah.
And it rolls into, I go take care of other people's gardens while it's cool. And then the rest of the day is all about our garden and whatever it needs to happen out there.
What kind of animals are you raising?
So we have currently turkeys, chickens, and rabbits. Mm-hmm. And every other year we do a couple of pigs.
Okay. So are you familiar with Joel Salatin?
Yes.
Yeah. And you know how he rotates his animals and
yep.
He calls it the salad bar.
The salad bar. His the cows going through the field and then the chickens going through the field. We don't have any. Cows are pretty land intensive.
Yes, they are.
And I've kept my attention mostly to things that are much smaller. I'm quite frankly very intimidated at the thought of trying to support a large hooved creature through the birthing process.
Yeah.
So we haven't gone down that path. Everything is pretty easy to support through hatching, or rabbits do just fine on their own 90% of the time. So
yeah.
I don't have to do any of that work. But yeah, Joe's got a pretty good handle on things. There's also another organization called Kiss the Ground.
Okay.
It's all about regenerative agriculture. Mm-hmm. So not just about going organic, but how you grow things in an interrelated relationship. So no monoculture kind mm-hmm. of growing operation. The need to have livestock grazing is actually very important. Our prairies, without having the buffalo out there, need the cows now mm-hmm. To do that job. The bacterial fungal relationship of what happens as they eat, churn the soil with their hooves, and then leave their waste behind is pretty important. So I follow a lot of those kind of methodologies. There's not a single flower garden bed out in my garden that has just one kind of plant in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So that's called Kiss the Ground?
Kiss the Ground. Yeah, there's a book about it, and there's an organization, and there's even another, there's a place called the Savory Institute that's based out of Boulder that's doing a lot of that work internationally, working with people in like places like Africa, mm-hmm. But trying to recover ground where drought has set in, the desertification of some of those farmlands. Interestingly, it's the desertification here in the United States is starting to take hold. It won't be too much longer if we keep under current practices.
Yeah.
And we'll have a dust bowl again in the Midwest.
That topsoil layer is really thin and fragile.
Thin and fragile, and we're losing more and more every year. It's astounding the amount that's going up into the air.
Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, it's so cool that you're taking the opportunity to let your family be a part of a solution to that. And I think that there's a movement that's starting to catch on. I know in the urban homesteading movement that there are a lot of people that are working a lot just on composting, building up topsoil, vermiculture, and things like that.
Yeah.
And so it's really admirable that you're doing that. I think more of us need to jump on that bandwagon before too long, or you know, we may be really in some problem times.
Yeah, it's interesting. The marketing success of convincing Americans that green lawns are a sign of status and need to be maintained. The amount of money that people spend on maintaining a green grass lawn and the rules that are in place that require you to do so are really interesting. We don't spend any time out here on growing grass. It's all about our food. The grasses that grow around the house are pretty important for the grazing animals, that elk and deer that move through out here. So we leave it for them.
Yeah. And it's I think about the HOA here. Yeah. Absolutely treacherous. And it's like, if you don't, if you don't water your lawn, you get a ticket. If you let your lawn grow too long, you get a ticket. It's like,
If it becomes too weedy, you get a ticket. If your landscape doesn't comply to a certain measure of rock to plant to grass kind of ratio, you're out of order.
Oh my gosh. Totally insane. I'll have to have you come talk to the HOA. At least maybe they'll kind of lay off the tickets for a while. Well, let's move on. You and your husband have just found a new potential business that you're thinking about going into. And it involves, you've been a fiber artist for a long time. You've been involved in things like spinning and knitting and making your own yarn and things like that. Tell us a little bit about the new opportunity and what's exciting about that for you.
Well, part of what my husband and I have been seeking is having a business here that the two of us can do together, taking advantage of both of our skill sets, that allows us the flexibility to hopefully together maintain the farm more, rather than it being mostly me. My husband would love to participate more than he's able. Mm-hmm. So we've been keeping our eyes kind of peeled for opportunities coming up. I was in Facebook land one day and saw a posting from a business that I have followed for quite some time, because I covet their products. They produce some equipment that allows you to take wool and turn it into something that's spinnable and ready to go. I enjoy spinning my own yarn, weaving, knitting, all those types of things. Kind of a pretty niche market, I suppose you'd say, but it's actually a growing industry. Mm-hmm. The people that are taking up the interest in fiber related activity. So I saw this business come up, and they said they were looking for a fiber-loving unicorn, which translates into someone who has the love of the fiber and the art, and also has the manufacturing background and maybe some capital to purchase their business, because they wanted to retire. We've moved through the process of kind of due diligence working. I have unabashedly taken advantage of the small business development centers here in Loveland, Larimer County. Mm-hmm. And use their support for both advice, counseling on how to approach the process, and like the CPAs who volunteer to do business valuations, those types of things. I've spent probably the better part of 2 months putting together what culminated in a letter of intent that we sent off last week. Mm-hmm. To the business owners and the broker that they're working with, so that we can express our interest in buying their business. So it regardless of what transpires with their response and where things go with that, my husband and I are both now pretty galvanized around the idea that we're going to own our own business and mm-hmm. create something together in that way that works for us.
Wonderful. And give him the opportunity to be, able to work in the garden more and that kind of thing. That's great. So the business is already established. We can't really give any names or anything like that for legal reasons, but the business is already established. And with that, I suspect there will be a customer base that's already inherent in the business.
Yeah, they have a great reputation. They make a great product. One of the reasons why I've coveted their equipment is because of its ease of use, the quality of the result that you get off the other end of it. And they just have a fabulous reputation for customer service. And that really spoke well to my husband and I and aligned with our value system. If you're going to spend your time making something, my husband is a guy whose attention to detail is, we'll just say it's keen. I'm very much the idea person, marketing, and can very handy and mechanical, but my husband is the boss of here's the degree to which we're going to work on this until I think it's just right. So their quality matches well to what he thinks how things should be built and how things should be supported. I've done a lot of customer support kind of roles, customer facing roles, and it's really important to maintain a great relationship and be responsive to customers. So that this business has done that as part of their history too.
In terms of your farm, are you ever looking at going beyond just supporting your family with the food, or are you going to be looking at expanding the farm operation to maybe do a CSA or something like that down the road?
The level of effort it would take for us to do that would be pretty extreme here on this property, since the soil is not really friable, and the effort it would take to accomplish that, the amount of water we would have to dump into it, doesn't really make that feasible. What I probably what would be more appropriate for me is some of what I've already been doing is selling the herbs that I grow to people and turning them into useful things to people,
That's cool.
potions.
So you're going to have like a multifaceted kind of lifestyle in terms of the new business with the fiber arts tools and the farming continuing as a primary focus of, providing food for your family. What are the things do you anticipate are going to be the most challenging about that?
The finding the balance of not having a business that you own can become something that is all consuming. I think I've used the word balance a few times, flexibility and balance, and how you structure your day. Owning your own business can be something where it ends up consuming you, and it can be really hard to leave the office, so to speak. And as a couple going into owning a business together, having our relationship be the most important piece, as opposed to the business being the most important piece. I don't see that as being too much of a problem for us. It's something to be present to and make sure we pay the right amount of attention to, and not get out of kilter in that way. We've been married for 31 years, and I'd like for it to keep going. And we know that we work well together. We've built enough things and done enough work together that we know that that's not the issue. But that, as I consider what the challenges might be, those are the things that are kind of present for me.
So as far as you've already delivered the letter of intent,
Yes.
and you now is we were going to talk about the waiting game.
Oh yes, the waiting game.
So now you've got to wait for the business owners and their broker to come back to you and say yay or nay or something in between.
Yeah. When I sent off the letter and then didn't hear anything from the broker, there was no acknowledgement that he'd even received the package of information from me. So I initiated a phone call to him and was assured that they received the package and he'd sent it on to the business owners. And since then, it's been crickets. So you're playing that waiting game, and I try not to actually think about it. I just kind of sent it out, and I hold the intent for it to work out. But I also know that as things work, it may not work out for us, and I'll allow that to be what it needs to be, and wait for at least this or better will come our way. I'm sure of it.
That. That's the, you say that that's some motto that you all have, this or better.
Yeah, it'll be this or better for us. I'm certain of it.
Say a little bit more about that. I like that. I like that mindset, actually.
Well, kind of releasing the attachment to the outcome, not really being focused on that so much as, for me, it's pretty much about the journey. So if this doesn't come together, I will wish the business owners all the best in the world. And the people, whoever does acquire the business, I'll wish them all the best. And I'll probably buy the product eventually. I'll have saved up enough that I can, I'll own one, whether we make them or not. But kind of keeping a positive intent around the whole thing. And I think thinking in other ways can be self-sabotaging. Yeah. And I maintain a very positive outlook in my life.
Oh, that's good.
So that's this or better has become my little motto around the whole thing. You can repeat it as a mantra and as you know, meditate on it, whatever, to accomplish the outcome. Yeah, because the outcome is the bits once this one specific business it can help us achieve our goal, but it's not the goal. Mm-hmm. So whatever we end up developing or acquiring or whatever, having a certain way of living is the goal.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that certain way of living.
Oh, certain way of living. Probably very conscious-based, compassion-based living and balance with the world and the people and everything around me. So that's pretty important to me.
Yeah.
As I left behind kind of a corporate mindset, even I think about how to live and be in the world. If I ever did go back to working in that kind of an environment again, it would have to be a company that is very focused on kind of the triple bottom line. It's not all about profit. You need to be very interested in your impact.
Mm-hmm.
Social impact is pretty important. So, probably very consciousness-based, mm-hmm. Heart-centered in how I approach things.
Wonderful. That's really cool. It occurred to me while you were talking that this or better might actually be cool. That kind of a cool brand name.
Oh, my. Right, I think you're onto something, Franklin.
I think that has.
It's a great idea.
It's got a nice hook to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. This or better.
Think about it.
What am I going to do with that? Dream a dream, create something awesome. We'll see what comes together. You never know where the next idea comes from, obviously.
That's so true, right? It's like inspiration just comes at the most odd times and in the most weird places.
Yeah. So now I got to make sure I've got a handle on this or better before this gets published.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Register that domain name. Right after we get done with this conversation. Yeah.
You bet.
Well, at this point, we really don't have something for people to look up regarding what you're doing.
Oh, no.
So we don't really have anything for anybody. We don't have anything for anyone to do right now except to just enjoy this story. But do you anticipate that there will be a way that people can find out when your business, when you have an announcement to make? Is there a way that people can find out about that?
Yeah, I'm in Facebook land and in those kinds of places. My marketing will plan strategy because as part of doing the due diligence, I have a business plan mm-hmm. that includes a marketing plan for kicking into place and transitioning the business, the install base of customers as well as their retailers that they work with. So it's all about the relationship. So sure. People will see me reaching out and doing a bunch of work in that manner. So I'll be cropping up one way or another, this or better.
This or better. I like it. That's such a great great feeling to that statement, you know?
Yeah. I'm not even sure where I picked it up. Someplace along the way.
Well, we're grateful that you did.
It's working for me. I hope it works for other people too.
Well, Melissa, I really have enjoyed our conversation, and I know that the people who are listening have too, and I just wish you the best of luck, and everybody just be on the lookout for new fiber arts tools and This or Better. The brand name, This or Better. And best of luck to you, Melissa, and I'm really excited to hear good news as this all unfolds.
Thank you, Franklin. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to, subscribe, and review the Reset Podcast. The Reset Podcast features interviews, insights, and in-depth reflections that will help you navigate your own reset. Do you have a story to share about a reset you've experienced? If you'd like to be a guest or share an idea for a topic you'd like to hear about, please contact podcast@franklintaggart.com. Reset Podcast interviews are recorded with Zoom. If you haven't tried Zoom video conferencing software, please click the link in the show description and sign up for your free trial now. You won't be disappointed. More information about this show and guests is available now at franklintaggart.com. The Reset Podcast is a production of Franklin Taggart and Make Your Own Way Media. All rights reserved.